Good morning, everybody. Actually, it's about 10 seconds past noon, so good afternoon, everybody. At least here on the East Coast, my guests are in Minneapolis, I think. So they're still a little bit into the morning on this Monday after the Super Bowl. Happy Valentine's Day to everybody. Hope you get some flowers going after dinner, some candy, treat yourself, whatever the case may be. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. I got a show with some good friends of ours over at Fielding International, Randy Fielding. Randy Fielding himself, founding partner and innovation leader at Fielding International, which is an interdisciplinary architecture and education firm that designs schools where learners thrive, and they do design schools with learning in mind, as opposed to the schools I went to when I was a kid. Okay? And we have Nathan Strange here, who also, Nathan, I hope I got your last name right. I think it's Strange, who's a senior leading designer over there. We're going to talk about what they call design patterns in schools, and you can learn more at Fielding International's website, which is fieldingintl.com. We're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. That's our home website for Equity and Access, our consortium for education. Our magazine, Equity and Access, is over there, which we're always very proud of. It's an online journal. Just click on the cover and enjoy the magazine. All our articles are up there on site. All of our podcasts are there on site. And there's a link to SEL Today, our new website, all about social emotional learning at seltoday.org. But everything is connectable over at ace-ed.org. And I do hope you go over there and check it all out. And enough of me blabbing. Okay. Getting piano music. Why am I getting piano music? What is this? All right, let's see here. I don't know what this is. Let's try back here. Okay, hello, who's there? Who's this at 9159? Guys?
Not us, Larry. This is Randy Fielding and Nathan.
Hi, Randy.
And that piano music was pretty, but that wasn't coming from Minneapolis.
Yes, I don't know what it was. I clicked on one of the two numbers here at the set. That's 9159, and it was piano hold music. Okay? So I'm dumping that.
All right.
There you go. Jeez, thank you. By the way, Nathan, that was beautiful piano. Thank you. I really appreciate it. Okay? And I want you to know the kids are practicing the piano at home. Well, I was going to start the show. We had a little tech glitch, okay, last week we wanted to do the show, so we rescheduled it for today. And I was going to proudly say how we finally got past the tech glitches, and then I get the piano music. Okay? So all I can say is be glad I'm not your air traffic controller. That's all I have to say on that subject. It's that simple. Nathan, how did I do in your last name, Strange?
You nailed it, Strange, yeah.
Oh, man.
Good job, Larry. Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And Mr. Fielding? No, I'm only kidding. It's Fielding.
Randy.
Yeah, hi, Randy. Good to
Larry,
have you.
You know, you can lose the mister with me.
I know, and I will. It's already done, okay? Consider it done. We're going to talk about first of all, Randy, start the company. You founded it. When did you find it, and what was it about with education? Just put all that into perspective for everybody, because you guys are an architectural firm and a design firm. Good.
Well, thanks for that question, and I'm going to answer it in a way that also gets into another question that we're going to talk about, which is design patterns. So,
yeah, do it.
Go back to 1958, my first day of kindergarten, and I thought it was crazy. I thought there was a pattern of control and activity that was prison-like. I had been used to – I grew up on Long Island, by the way. And,
man, I'm loving this.
We lived pretty close to a working harbor. It was kind of a blue-collar area, but there was access to water and a lot of trees, and I spent a lot of time wandering around without too much supervision. And trees and dogs were my first curriculum. And so I go to school, and I'm told to sit in a chair and look straight ahead, and then I can look out the window occasionally, and that I need to take a nap at a certain time, and I can go outside for about 20 minutes a day. And I thought, oh, my God, this is a crazy pattern of activity, and I knew it was wrong on that very first day. In fact, I ran away from school.
Are you serious? Did you really?
Yeah. I ran away from school, and anyway, I went back. I ended up going through school and four different universities, and got a Master of Architecture, and I ended up working at the largest architecture firm in the world back beginning in 1979. But it was those patterns of activity where you have a misunderstanding by teachers of what education is about. A lot of teachers grew up thinking that education is about controlling and managing kids, and in fact, that isn't what learning is about. Learning is about creating an environment where kids can find their own groove, find their own way. And that environment is used in a couple of different ways. It's used typically by educators as an educational environment, and Nathan, will do this often, where that environment is one of mutual support, of listening, of being learner-centered, of supporting student agency, of creating an environment where kids feel a sense of love and belonging, of security, of supporting, of curiosity. And that can be a learning environment. It can be an environment about relationships and about power, really. But I also love to build stuff. I love squiggling my toes in the mud. My favorite thing was to be in the water and to feel that sensate aspect of all your skin tingling and the feeling of movement. I love running with dogs, and I love climbing trees and building stuff in the ground. So the founding of I've actually been leading an architectural practice for 40 years now.
Wow.
That was putting those two things together, wanting to solve a problem of creating learner-centered schools and also loving architecture and loving space and what space and place can be. And so, it wasn't surprising that I would end up founding a firm. I came from three generations of retailers. I worked for all of them. I worked for my grandmother, who had an antique store in Manhattan, my granddad, who had an electrical business in Manhattan, my mom, who had a dress shop on Long Island. I would wrap presents. My dad, who had a furniture store, and I would deliver furniture. That was my first full-time job. And so the idea of having a business, small business being connected to a community, these connecting with wanting to change that pattern of learning and wanting to build things meant that my first job was Skidmore, Owings & Merrill, 1979, then the largest architectural firm in the world.
Right?
I got a chance to design a university for 8,000 students. My first task, I started out as a designer, and I loved it. I was excited. But within a couple of years, I had started moonlighting. I've gotten opportunities to design some projects and publish some of my, the first project I did, and so opened my own shop back in 1983 in Chicago, and ended up doing things for communities. So it was for churches, synagogues, and then schools, and within a few years I realized that I just wanted to focus on schools and have the most impact to it wasn't long before I decided we've got to change schools all around the world. And so I've been so thrilled to have an opportunity, Larry, to do that, and with our buddy Jay. I've been doing that with Jay for
my friend,
I think 16 years now.
Right? It's unbelievable. I've always been impressed with your company. I mean, you're so, and I know a lot of people at your company by now, and everybody there, they're all architects, so to speak, project planners. Okay, not everybody's an architect is what I mean. The architects are architects, project directors, et cetera, et cetera. But they all understand education, all right? And they understand, and more importantly, I want to say it differently, they understand learning, and they understand how the environment affects learning. And that's really what we're talking about here. All right, and it's a fascinating thing. And I'm just curious, Randy, before I go over and ask Nathan, do you ever go over and talk to schools and district administrators, in a classroom or whatever setting, okay, and talk to them about what really is on your mind, what you've learned, and how that works with what they're planning, school boards, that type of thing. Randy.
Yeah, many times. And we're thrilled to have the opportunity to do that, and we keep doing it. We're doing it weekly.
So what did they say? Okay, they went to school like you and I went to school. okay? And they have to run their schools, and we're going to get into more into the design centers in a second. You know, in a bureaucracy, let's face it, it's a bureaucracy, all right? But you guys rethink that, okay? And once you build that school that way, it changes the whole idea of the bureaucracy, okay, which is something I love that you do. Okay, when they hear you speak about all this, what's their reaction? The professionals in education, the top levels.
I'm going to answer and then pass it to Nathan, who is an expert on alignment. He's an expert at talking about misalignment, because in almost every case, when we talk to professional educators, communities, and sometimes it's with parents too, they'll say, the schools you're talking about, the model you're talking about, the shift in patterns of activity, the paradigm shift, the way those schools look, I love that. That's what I want for my kids, and I wish I went to a school like that. That's pretty universal. There is usually a but, though. They take different forms. One of the most powerful buts comes from parents and professional educators saying they're accountable to parents, and I think it's a kind of fear-based. What we find in the world of education, it typically is not filled with leadership is often not as devoted to innovation as you in business. So in business, a guru for 30 years has been Peter Drucker. And Drucker says the business of education, a business is innovation. Yeah. And if you're not innovating, you'll be out of business in a few years. And so a lot of businesses understand that and tend to value risk-taking and innovation. But education is often people go into that thinking this is a wonderful field, they want to serve, they love learning, but also it's a kind of safe thing. Typically people don't go in it as big risk takers, right? So we find that in education there tends to be a lag behind what's happening in business with principles around innovation and space. You don't see any businesses anymore that or very few of them where their offices look like they're from the 40s and 50s. You know, their offices have changed. And we all know that. We all
no
have
more the man in
the
great
minds of googly-looking offices, much more collaborative, much more natural light, much more diverse and fluid. But with schools, however, most schools still have that same model of cells and bells, which is classrooms and corridors. They've added some nicer entries and lobbies, and they've added better carpeting and air conditioning, little bigger classrooms, and then they stick a common area here and there, but it's essentially the same model. And what educators will often say is, we do want to do better, either we can, we have a chance to do that, and we've done that with actually over 200 schools around the world, or what we'll hear is, you know, we love that, but our parents are really focused on these more traditional outcomes. They want to see their kids get into a top school, and they want to make sure that they get the discipline and are not distracted. We're worried about all those pretty spaces you show are distracting. And so the vision often gets a bit watered down, and they'll say, give us great colors, give us great furniture, give us great lighting, give us good acoustical treatments, throw in some breakout spaces. But we want to make sure that every teacher still has a classroom and that the kids are all, you know, doing really well on AP scores. And so there begins to be the beginning often of a kind of misalignment between the vision, that is, they're saying, yes, I know what the World Economic Forum is saying about the skills needed for the future. Kids need those collaborative, creative, inquiry-based skills, but in fact, what I can do is this, and that has been tough, and as an architect for 40 years, I've struggled with that, and in the last decade, I realized that the way out was beyond what I could do. I could only do it in collaboration with people like your good buddy, Jill Akers, and Nathan Stricken here, and Mike Posthumus. So we now have these wonderful, innovative, professional educators, learning designers who are embedded in every project. And Nathan, I'm going to turn it over to him to talk a little bit about that alignment journey, which is how we're beginning to change that, to get past some of those buts, those obstacles that prevent people from doing what they know is right.
Yeah, and by the way, I just want to – wait, hold on, Nathan. I just want to say one thing about Randy's point. All right. We're training students. Our goal is to get them to think, of course, and learn, okay, certain basics. But we're training students to look to the future and become part of the workforce. And the workforce environment, okay, outside of a factory floor where there are more safety concerns, so to speak, the workforce office environment, okay, is no longer like it was in the 40s. Okay, with Miss Johnson wearing a skirt and high heels sitting at her desk outside of the boss's office. Okay, it's a very different world. It's a collaborative world. Okay, it's a world that communicates all over the world. Okay, and that's part of what you guys are doing. And I love the fact you don't create schools, you build learning environments. And I want to remind you, we have to remember, school districts, though they may not admit it, it's a bureaucracy. You go to a big school, city school district, it's a bureaucracy. Okay, so that's what you're getting into, Mr. Kafka. Yeah, Nathan, you may proceed now, Nathan Stranke.
Yeah. Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah. You're right, you're welcome.
I was going to add to Randy's comment. We view the work not about just physical spaces, but that physical spaces are part of a larger learning ecosystem.
Exactly.
And that ecosystem has three main parts. The vision that a school has, the educational program, you know, the pedagogies and curriculums, the assessments, all that goes into the program. But then how are the spaces and the environments going to support both the program and align to the vision? And when we get a chance to ask kind of higher level questions of, you know, how are your kids going to thrive now and in the future? We start to, and then bring it back to what you're doing right now, it's very quick that whether it's teachers or it's students or it's even parents, they identify these misalignments between those three components. And when those misalignments come out really quickly and both in quantity, but also just day-to-day operations, you start to create demand for something different. And that's where we can open the door and say, all right, let's create physical environments that are really aligned with what you want to go in your program and what you've already identified in your vision.
And that's very important. I'm going to segue again, everybody. It's Fielding International, all right? And top of mind, this is a good segue here. Top of mind, okay, in every school district right now, and it has been in there for a while now, it's top of mind, is social-emotional learning, all right? And that's a different world, okay, than sitting at your desk all day and having the teacher scream at you, okay? My point is this. When you got to design spaces now for what schools need, okay? And SEL is very important to us, and I know for a fact it's very important to you guys. You know, we work on SELtoday.org together, okay? Nathan, I'll ask Nathan this. Nate, put this into a perspective between SEL and learning design these days, because I'm telling you, this is top of mind at every school district right now. And we've got to make the changes that make kids feel comfortable in an ever-changing world. Adult life skills, if I may. So go ahead. I'll be quiet now. Nathan, if you don't want to do that, you can pass it to the boss if you want, okay?
I'll start by saying you're absolutely right. Everyone is talking about social-emotional learning.
Yeah.
Everyone's talking about holistic safety and well-being, but I think what often happens is we go to solutions first without deeply understanding the problem. When we take the time to deeply understand the problem, we understand we can't just attach, an advisory program onto our existing model and have kids learn about, you know, different soft skills for 20 minutes a day. And think that's going to solve our problems. We really need to create, going back to that more holistic ecosystem, what are going to be the way that we adjust the time and what are the spaces that are going to support this much more holistic sense of getting kids what they need, not only their academic needs or their physical safety, but how are we going to support them emotionally, mentally, physically, in some cases, spiritually, and certainly intellectually and academically as well. But when we do that, we can't just attach things to the existing model. It really, in our minds, when we get a chance to talk with people, we talk about what is the paradigm shift that's really going to allow us to embed this sense of holistic safety and well-being, which of course is in company, fostering that sense of social emotional learning into our daily practices. And what we find is oftentimes the environments are a barrier to that, that we're put in these sort of rectangular classrooms told to sit down and listen for, 80% of our day. That's not an environment that's supporting really sound social emotional learning. And so I would just say that it can't be thought of as an attachment to the existing system or an add-on. It really does need to be more of a holistic approach.
And that was good, Nathan. And Randy, how long have you known this? This isn't something new that popped into your head about 3 months ago or 6 months ago when all this became top of mind. How long have you been designing with all that in mind, Randy?
Well, I understood it when I was 5 on that first day of kindergarten because I understood that the social relationships, this paradigm of teacher in control, students as obedient workers, was wrong. And I also know that it shut me down emotionally. It was depressing. But I wasn't able to articulate it well till I was 15 years old and I began to read John Dewey. And that opened the door to hundreds of other books. And the fact is, this is not new. We've known that, Maria Montessori, Rudolf Steiner, back well over 100 years ago, they put a lot of those same principles that Dewey articulated into practice, ideas around experiential learning, ideas around grouping so that kids were in an environment. Think of a Montessori classroom where they're having a strong tactile connection to things. All of that was to ground kids in a space where they felt comfortable. Another area that I think was key that helped understand this, put words to something I knew intuitively, was Abraham Maslow. Famous psychologist, researcher who in right around the 50s came up with his hierarchy of needs. And it was research-based. And looking at it, I think most of us are familiar with it. At the bottom of the pyramid is we need to feel secure. We need to feel safe. And as you move up that pyramid through, there's love and belonging, and we get to the top, which is self-actualization. That really is the underpinning, I think, a good underpinning, a framework for what social-emotional learning is about. And you could say it's social-emotional living, social-emotional being human, because it underpins what's important to all of us. We need to feel safe and secure. If we apply that to physical space and we start looking at, for example, design patterns around what makes us feel safe and secure, what makes us feel a sense of love and belonging, what allows us to self-actualize, there's so many patterns. There's so much good work that's been going on since Confucius's time, believe it or not. Confucius said that we see and we have some understanding. We see and hear, we have greater understanding. We see and hear and we do, and that's when we really have understanding. And if you look at the patterns around that, let me just step back a minute and say, what is a design pattern? I keep talking about that. Well,
I was going to ask. Pattern, you. I was going to ask you. That was next.
Yeah,
right up here on my screen. Okay.
It is a sequence of activities that we can do over and over again, we can look at that sequence of activities, but we can interpret it a million different ways. And I say that because our design patterns, we've got 75 of them, which are freely available. You could go to our website and see it there, or you could go to schoolpatterns.com there and see all of them. Each one of them defines a particular problem, and I'd say 20 of these relate very directly to social-emotional learning. It defines a problem, defines a solution, and then a key thing is it has a sketch, it has a visual. It allows us to build a common language. Because often what we learn to communicate with words, speaking and then writing, but we don't have all those common words for visual representation. So students may be able to say, I feel sad, I feel anxious, I feel competitive, I feel angry. Or you may be able to see in their body language, they may even seem distracted or unengaged. But few students or even teachers know how to describe the physical environment that's going to be associated with great, more engaged students, students who feel a greater sense of safety and security. And so what we've done with these design patterns is created a series of sketches that anyone can understand, even five-year-olds. We will sometimes take a whole series, like a book full of these patterns, and send it to a community, even in another country, and then go and have a discovery visit. And we'll see 50 elementary school kids, starting at 5 years old, sitting on the floor with crayons, who just love seeing all those pictures, and they can explain it. But each of the design patterns we develop also has a series of annotations, so we're putting words and pictures together. So, for example, at a very simple level, the beginning, welcoming entry. What does that mean? So many schools we look at look prison-like, or they look like a strip shopping center. They're not inviting, or they look like a bank. Some of the very expensive modern ones look grandiose. You know, they have a huge glass atrium and a stairway. But what is it that makes them inviting? What are some of the things that makes people feel invited or and comfortable? And sometimes that's a canopy to keep the rain out, or it's a place to sit in the sun in the northern hemisphere, or it's a place to sit in the shade if you're in the southern hemisphere.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are some of the basic things. Being able to see in and see students working and learning grounds you. What do I see in there? I'm beginning to see what's inside, what's out. These are some of the things, the basics, that going back to your question about, you know, understanding social emotional learning, these basic needs that Maslow talked about, how are they expressed? What kinds of spaces and physical attributes will support that?
Randy, I'm going to ask you something, and this is important. It's kind of what you just said a minute ago, but I want you to go into a little more detail. If you go in and design a school, and you've done this, you've designed the schools in Russia, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You designed schools all over the United States, probably in Canada, I would imagine, maybe as well.
Lots in Canada, more than
good.
A dozen.
Okay, there you go, okay? But with SEL, social emotional learning, there's also, if I may, I think I'm correct here, a cultural aspect. Okay, and as when you design a school, and if it's in an all Latino neighborhood, or an all African American neighborhood, or an all white neighborhood, or a suburban versus what's that? When you guys go into that, all right, you guys and gals, okay, from Fielding, and you look at talk about the way the student body needs to relate to the learning. In all the design patterns. And that can be either Nathan. I'll ask Randy, but if you want to pass it to Nathan, you can.
Hey, I'll comment, and then I'll pass it to Nathan. So
okay.
One thing I'll say, having worked in 50 countries and done a lot of walkabouts at schools and talking to kids, we are mostly listening to the same song. 95% of our needs as human beings are the same in Sri Lanka. They're the same in Africa and Europe, in China and Russia, in Saudi Arabia, in Canada, in Mexico, the United States, Costa Rica. Most of those things are the same.
Great
but
point.
There, a lot of it has to do with external circumstance, extrinsic values, which are kinds of pressures on kids. So When we do a lot of international schools, often associated with embassies, and these are some of the most expensive schools in the world.
Yep.
And there's a lot of pressure on those kids to get super high test scores and to get into Ivy League colleges or one tier below. And so when we design those environments, the same principles are in effect, but there is because there's a lot more money and there's a lot more pressure to do add-ons, to keep building on those basic things with bigger and bigger. So we want a big auditorium, which are incredibly expensive. We want three gyms. you know, because athletic programs are so important. We want more complex science labs. We want a better art room. We want a more impressive facility because parents are paying top dollars. The principals are really the same in the poorest neighborhoods we work with, in neighborhoods of color. The things that kids need are they're important, but in those poorer schools, they're often more innovative because necessity is the mother of invention. So an example, my favorite school is right here in the Twin Cities in St. Paul, and Nathan knows it very well, and they're our longest-term client. It's been more than 20 years now. We've done many phases of work. High School for Recording Arts is
yeah,
the area.
Yeah, we had them on the show. They're in St. Paul. That gentleman was on the show with us. He's a nice guy.
Amazing school and very, very tight on resources. And one of the things that's most important to them is music, and that recording studio, which is connected to it, is actually a public-private partnership. I mean, they couldn't have afforded to do those recording studios, but the founder of the school was a hip-hop artist who works with Prince. And so he was able to use his funds, but then they're able to rent that to the school, and they're in the same facility. When we did their kitchen, we used kitchen equipment, and that kitchen actually creates food for other kids in the neighborhood to help support the cost of that. They share the building we finally bought was an old athletic center or a health club, and we condominiumized it or broke it up, and so we rent like 30% of the school to a commercial swim club, and all of that enables to work, and it is it's not our most beautiful school, but it's the one that to me, you know, makes my heart beat the fastest because it's a biggest problem solver. And honestly, the same principles you can see in that school that you see in our most expensive schools,
exactly.
But implemented differently, different materials, different budgets. I'll stop and I'll pass it over to Nathan.
Yeah, by the way, the beauty in that way, I just got to say, the beauty in that school just goes to show you, okay, that beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I want to say this the right way, and it goes a lot deeper than skin deep, okay? It's way entrenched, the beauty of that school, but you guys go ahead. Nathan?
So, to your point, Larry, you asked about how different maybe priorities in different parts of the world. We've done, you know, as Randy said, work in over 50 countries, and in most of them we've done really deep listening with the communities there, and especially with students and teachers. And always, no matter where we are, there's always two kind of key ideas that students particularly, but teachers also, want more of. And I think both are related to wellness or social-emotional learning.
Mm-hmm.
One is all people want to spend more time outside. They feel like schools have been too contained.
Interesting.
That we want to bring learning outside. We want to connect with nature. We want fresh air. And we also we want to feel like even when we're inside, we have visuals outside. We feel like this is part of the community and the natural world around us. So that's one. But the second one is wanting to have more intimate space, small group space, space to get away for privacy, space to go and reflect, might be a space to calm down or a quiet reading nook, but space to be alone or in small groups. I think that is, and that I think gets right to the essence of social-emotional learning, that we have an ability to not always be in these, you know, larger groups or open settings, but we have an ability to get away and address our needs as they come up. And that when we're able to create environments that support both of those things, it's right away going to have a much greater sense of wellness in the school.
I mean, it's just so, you know, I have to say, and it's funny the way you said that, it goes right back to the beginning of this conversation. Randy felt this when he was 5 years old.
Hmm.
He wanted to be outside. Okay, you go ask people in Saudi Arabia, Russia, where you guys have built schools all over the U.S., they still say the same thing. They want to be outside. Well, they can't always be outside. You can't teach a school outside here in Maine or in Minneapolis right now. Okay, but you can give them access in other ways to that other environment and make them feel comfortable. I got to say something. If you go on here, it's fieldinginternational.com. I'll put this in here in the description, /design/patterns. And they've taken the time to put how many of these on here, guys? They're just amazing. How many diagrams?
There's about 75 of them right now. And you can just go to schoolpatterns.com. It's sort of a shortcut to get there, schoolpatterns.com. Yeah, there's about 75 of them right now. And, yeah, I would say, as Randy said earlier, about a third of them are directly related to social-emotional learning.
Well, I might be more. Okay, it might be more because just by the, you know, I'm just looking at the names of them here, layers of privacy, okay, learning gardens, learning on water. I'm just picking out here, you know, a couple of things. You know, learning walls, lighting, learning and color, okay, local signature, okay. I can even imagine what that is, you know, bring in some of the local beauty, et cetera, meandering path, et cetera, et cetera. These when you go over this, it's all it is social-emotional, and then it adds to the learning environment. I find it really really just fascinating. So let me ask the next question, okay, generically. This is going to be a funny question. Randy, generically, okay, how hard is it to convince a school board and educators that there's a new way to do this? How hard is that? Generically.
It's easy to explain there's a new, better way to do it. What we've found that's difficult is how do we implement it? It's not, and one of our superintendents a few years ago said to me, Randy, you know, it's not so much the why anymore. I think most of us get it. It's the how. And so the how has been the challenge, and as I said earlier, a big part of the solution then was to explain how do we do it operationally in terms of educational readiness, in terms of teacher coaching and leadership coaching. And this is where Nathan and Jill and Mike have been so instrumental, and where I find we're now beginning to maybe, you know, turn the course. Because, you know, 10 and 20 years ago, we were designing schools with often beautiful common areas that were ill-used. And now we're seeing teachers just said, well, that's a beautiful space, but, you know, I want to make sure I have a room that's like a classroom where I can close the door. And what leadership was saying, it's not that they didn't understand a better way, but they didn't know how to implement that. Well, my teachers, so what they would be saying is, you know, they have a lot to get done. They have a lot of requirements. So learning this new way of collaborating or learning a way of supporting students to meet a lot of their own learning needs, they don't know how to do it. And so, you know, Jill, well, she is an expert at working with teachers over time, and it's often 1 to 3 years where the teachers learn how to do it. And once parents see that teachers are confident in how beautifully they're doing in these new environments, and leaders see that, it's easy, and it doesn't cost more money. It is a paradigm shift, and the key is, I think, the how. The why is not too hard. We can usually get that across, you know, pretty quickly. People say, okay, I see why we should change.
Yeah, it's time. And I have to ask one more thing. We only got a couple of minutes left. In K-12, as you go into a district, and I know like in Rhode Island, okay, you guys are working on elementary schools. Is that more, I believe it is not educationally, but is that the better place to do this than a high school? Okay, if you had the choice, where would you do it? Where would you pop it? Okay, Nathan, I'll ask you that one. Is it better for a district to look at changing the environment in an elementary school, or better to do it in a high school?
I don't think there's
and
a better
way, you, that
place
are,
to start.
By the way, that's a shaky question. You have 2 minutes to answer, so go ahead. Yeah.
I think that you can oftentimes I see the biggest area that we could improve our way we organize both our environment and our entire educational program is in middle and high school. When we get a chance to walk through middle and high schools, oftentimes by then we see kids just really dejected and already understanding that school's not for them. So how are we going to create environments that get outside of these segregated subjects? I think that's a challenge. I wouldn't say that we shouldn't focus on that. It may be in some ways easier to do that at the elementary level because there is more of a focus on relationships and kind of not so subject based. But I would not advocate for saying we should just start at the elementary level. I think there's a lot of opportunities across K-12.
Right, and I just have to end there, but I'll tell you, I love what you just said because you break down the walls, you break down the barriers between social studies and English and math and science and everything else, okay? And if I may just use that kind of terminology, that whole interdisciplinary, to make an interdisciplinary school, you need interdisciplinary architecture and design. And that breaks down those barriers once again. I love working with you guys. This company just does great work, okay? And you're educators at heart and architects for real, and you're just absolutely amazing. Thank you, Randy. Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. We love working with you, too. And thank all
pleasure.
Of you, of the listening audience, for being here with us. It's just a pleasure to be a part of it.
And if I can just plug one thing, we just took our design patterns and created an entire new spatial paradigm, which we're calling our thriving spatial paradigm. So we'd love to be back and talk about that paradigm shift as well.
Anytime. Okay. Sarah's listening, I'm sure. Sarah, let's schedule that in. Okay, all right, my good buddy over there helps me do the scheduling. Thanks, guys. Stay safe.
All right, thanks, Larry. Bye, take care.
As it all winds down, and sorry about the Vikings. So, well, what can I say? Talk to you later. Be good, guys. Thank you. Okay, that's Nathan and Randy. Randy Fielding, Nathan Strange from Fielding International, fieldingintl.com. Okay, and go over this. The schoolpatterns.com is absolutely amazing. When you see this, you're not going to believe it, what's possible. All right, we'll archive over at ace-ed.org. We also have seltoday.org, our magazine over at both places, actually, Equity and Access. Check it all out. All right, thank you all for listening. And again, happy Valentine's Day.